The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, 8 men who pleaded guilty to their involvement in the largest drug seizure in the history of the state have been jailed for a combined 129 years. 6 men were caught aboard the MV Matthew. 2 others tried to offload drugs on board a second ship in the Irish Sea in September 2023. Frank Graney, Newstalk's courts correspondent, is with us. Frank, this boat is still bobbing up and down in Cork Port because they couldn't do anything with it until the conclusion of these proceedings. But every time I pass it, it's the size of it that catches my attention. It was a huge vessel and it carried a lot of drugs.
Absolutely massive. The most expensive piece of evidence in the history of the state, you could argue. This was a 190-metre bulk carrier called the MV Matthew, a massive cargo ship flagged in Panama. It had 5 enormous cargo holds. It was designed to carry enormous quantities of grain and other such things. It was originally named the MV Hanuman, but was renamed, reflagged in 2023. And in relation to these court proceedings, we heard it sailed from Curaçao, picked up cargo, the drugs that is, off the coast of Guyana, and was suspected of being a mothership for drug smuggling. We now know that that was the case. It used very sophisticated technology to evade detection. AIS spoofing, the court was told about this, involved the falsifying of navigation broadcasts, essentially looping the ship off Venezuela to conceal its true route. And as part of the operation, this drug trafficking operation, on the 22nd of September 2023, a fishing trawler called Castlemore was bought in Ireland for the purpose of rendezvousing with the MV Matthew when it arrived in Irish waters to receive the 2.2 tons of cocaine on board the cargo ship. However, 2 days later, this fishing trawler got into some trouble in choppy waters, ran aground off the coast of Wexford. The 2 men on board were rescued by the Coast Guard, and they were among the 8 people that were sentenced before the Special Criminal Court today. By then, by this point, when the men had to be rescued by the Coast Guard, the MV Matthew was skirting Irish territorial waters. At one point, it reported engine trouble for its bizarre movements. That was essentially to buy more time, the court was told. The Irish Coast Guard, understandably, became suspicious, engaged with the ship, at one point evacuated the ship's captain for medical reasons. Amazingly, that man, again, one of the 8 who found himself in the dock before the Special Criminal Court, took 2 suitcases with him, one of which was full of cash, €52,000, or US dollars rather, multiple phones, all of which were later used as evidence against him. With the MV Matthew unstable, riding high in the Irish Seas, and it was a very stormy day, the Navy vessel, William Butler Yeats, moved in. The MV Matthew ignored verbal orders from the Navy ship, so it declared itself a warship in dramatic fashion. Warning shots fired across the bow of the MV Matthew. Those initial shots fired from a rifle that did not deter the crew. So the William Butler Yeats engaged its deck-mounted machine gun. On board, we heard WhatsApp messages from a Dubai-based crime syndicate instructed the crew to haul ass to Sierra Leone and to be prepared to burn the cocaine if needed to get out of Irish waters as quickly as they could.
I was just going to say, I remember that they tried to make a run for it at this point, didn't they? Mm-hmm.
They did, yes. They tried to evade, I suppose, the Irish authorities with no luck, I should say. There was even an attempt to set that drug consignment on fire. Imagine 2.2 tons of cocaine that they had sitting in lifeboats. They set it alight. Thankfully, the Army Rangers were able to extinguish the fire before all of that essential evidence was destroyed. The Army moved in an Air Corps helicopter. We heard dropped in Army Rangers as the MV Matthew was trying to leave Irish territorial waters. The Army Rangers, part of this elite unit in the Irish Defence Forces, fast roped onto the deck while the vessel made these evasive manoeuvres in very rough seas. This was a very, very dangerous operation on behalf of the Army Rangers. They regained control of the ship. They guided it into Cork Harbour under escort. The drugs were then seized, analysed for purity. They were estimated to have a street value of €157 million. That is the highest seizure of drugs in the history of the state.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I've covered lots of stories off the southwest coast of drugs being captured before. It was never on this scale. Of the individuals before the court today, they got handed different sentences, I think ranging from 20 to 13 and a half years. So it was very much at the upper end of the sentencing spectrum.
Oh, absolutely. These were significant sentences handed down today to the eight crew members. We heard of a Sohail Jelvi. He was the captain, an Iranian man. A Harold Estoesta, a Filipino officer. Saeed Hassani, an Iranian officer. Kumali Ozogin, he was described as the Dutch eyes and ears. He was essentially hired by the cartel to make sure this operation passed off successfully. Ukrainians Mikhailo Gavirek, Vitaly Vlasoy, Vitaly Lapa, and an Englishman called Jamie Harbron. We heard they were recruited in Dubai, flown to South America, paid modestly in terms of, I suppose, what they risked, threatened, misinformed. They were led to believe, they argued, that they were transporting spare parts. They were described as the bottom tier, expendable in the cartel's hierarchy. And their levels of involvement varied. But the court refused to accept in its judgment today, refused to accept that they were merely cogs in the overall operation, because many of them were highly skilled seamen. And the judges described them as valuable components of the engine that drives international drug trafficking. The judge said there was a high level of trust placed in them by the upper echelons of the crime group. They were committed to and invested in the success of the venture. They were handed significant sentence today in relation to Kumali Ozogin, again, the cartel's man on the ground or the ship, as the case was here. The judges considered a 30-year sentence for him remarkable. The court was satisfied that he was most closely connected to the cartel, that his role was to ensure the job was done, that he was paid a large sum of cash for his role. He updated the higher-ups in the cartel every 2 to 3 days. But in the end, after taking mitigation into account, they moved away from that 30-year sentence. He was jailed for 20 years today, the longest sentence handed down. The other sentences then varied from 13 and a half years, which is what Jamie Harbron received, to 18 years, which was the sentence handed down to the Filipino man, Harold Estoesta.
Now, the estate, as my won't call it compensation, has a Bathurdole boat that nobody wants. So what happens to the MP Matthew?
That wasn't mentioned. There's obviously been a huge expense of storing it down at Cork Harbour, where it's been since, you know, that dramatic seizure. That wasn't mentioned today. There was an order made on behalf of the state to destroy the drugs, which have obviously also been held as evidence. And you would imagine, you know, in due course, they'll figure out what to do with the MV Matthew, which cost millions of euro and just goes to, I suppose, the sophistication and the resources of the criminal enterprise behind all of this. This was a huge win for state authorities. It just goes to show that when the likes of Gardaí, Revenue, the Irish Defence Forces come together, pool their resources, they can do great damage to these organisations. This is a massive shot across the bows to those who think Ireland is an easy target. And that was something that Detective Superintendent Joe O'Reilly was at pains to point out outside court after those sentences were handed down today.
Well, that
the
was
sentences
the
imposed today provide a clear message to persons involved in international drug trafficking that Ireland is not a soft target for transnational organised criminal networks. This and other drugs interdictions over recent years clearly demonstrate that all agencies of the state, supported by our international partners, will work together to successfully disrupt and dismantle criminal networks engaged in drug trafficking, thereby reducing harm to our communities.
The Superintendent Joe O'Reilly speaking outside the Courts of Criminal Justice, ending that report from Frank Graney, Newstalk's courts correspondent. And it is, of course, not lost on people that as that prosecution came to a conclusion this week, there was another significant operation involving Gardaí and the Navy that resulted in another substantial haul of drugs in West Cork as well.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on Newstalk.
It is 25 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Parliament Street in Dublin is a no traffic zone. It's the latest phase of the Dublin City Centre traffic plan. The first phase began last August, and consultation with the public last month found 90% of respondents were in favour of the move. Michael Pidgeon, Green Party councillor, good evening. Can you hear me, Michael?
I can indeed.
Ah, there you go. Michael, this to me should never have been reopened after lockdown. I've no idea what they were thinking in the City Council. It proved to be a wonderful addition to the Dublin streetscape.
100%. I think specifically for this street in particular as well. For those who don't know Parliament Street, it's kind of the one off Dame Street in front of City Hall that leads down to the Quays, opposite Capel Street on the south side. But it's such an obvious candidate for the treatment it's finally getting now. We did trials in 2021 over the weekend. It worked really, really well. If you know the businesses along there, it's mostly bars, restaurants
and exactly. Bars and hospitality.
And crucially, it's a tale of two cities on one street. If you're on the footpath, it's busy. And if you're on the main road itself, it is so quiet. Virtually no traffic there, even when traffic was allowed. I made a video promoting this idea a few months ago, and I actually lay down on the road at 5 p.m. on a weekday in Dublin City Centre on the middle of the road to make the video, and there was no issue with traffic because there's so little motor traffic there already. It is a prime candidate for doing this, and I'm really glad we finally done it. I just came from there today, and it was brilliant.
You're lucky there wasn't a guard, because that was probably breaking the law, I would imagine, lying down in the street. But, you know, there has been so much conversation around Dublin. The Dubs are very reluctant to change anything. And if you look at the Quays, the only people I know that are delighted with those changes are the taxi drivers and the bus drivers because of the benefit that they get from them. Have you been inundated with complaints about the traffic flow?
No. I find with a lot of these changes, there's a lot of controversy in advance. And this was true with Parliament Street, even though it was one of the less controversial ones. With the Quays, I'm sure with Grafton Street in its day, or Henry Street, what they did with Princess Street down where you are in Cork, there's always a lot of controversy beforehand. But I find it tends to fade away once the thing is actually there in practice and people's fears aren't realised. Parliament Street or the Quays, are so core to the city centre that they're linked in with what I think the core mission for Dublin is, which is not making it a place you just drive through or go through. It's a place you go to. You make it a destination that people actually want to enjoy.
Louis Copeland is on the line as well. You talked about Capel Street, just across from Parliament Street in Dublin. Louis, what have you seen the benefit of pedestrianisation where you are on that storm?
I was totally against it. I'm still against it. I would have preferred to kind of leave the street open during the day and close it off in the evening. It would have made more sense. Now they're cutting off another artery to get from the north side to the south side. Now, Michael said, there's no traffic, very little traffic on Parliament Street. Obviously, there's no traffic going through Parliament Street because they've cut off all the traffic coming into town. So, I mean, that's probably the reason why there's no traffic on Parliament Street.
Have you seen a fall off in business, Louis, because of what happened on Capel Street?
Yeah, but we did, yeah. Yeah, we did, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they should have kind of did it, as I say, close it off in the evening time and leave it open during the day.
And are we talking 10%, 20%? Is it substantial? Well, is it minor?
Well, people are starting to get back. They're starting to find their way to get into town now. But, I mean, it is totally confusing. Only today they've put signs up. Capel Street is a pedestrianised street. And today they put signs up saying, now, this is a street that two-way cycling, so you can cycle up and down Capel Street, although it's a pedestrian street. I mean, you see them going down on the delivery food people flying up and down. I mean, there's going to be somebody's going to get killed one of these days. I mean, it's either a pedestrian street or it's not a pedestrian street.
But can I put something to you, Louis, that you have an outlet here in Cork, a lovely outlet, not a million miles away from the studio that we're here.
I was going to say, it's on the pedestrian. Nigel, look after you.
But you have, I know there's kind of two entrances to it. There's a pedestrianised street, and there's a street with road access. Can I put it to you? Most people come in through the pedestrian side on that store.
I know that, yeah. I know, yeah. But, all I say is that I wish they would talk to retailers before they make these decisions.
OK, Okay, Michael Pitcher, should you have done better to talk to the likes of Louis Copeland? And did you go down to the people and say, no, we're doing this, is it a plan? Now, Mike, okay, Louis, you say you didn't. Michael, why didn't you?
On Parliament Street, yes. The overwhelming majority of businesses support it. In some ways, it's not surprising. It's a different street from Capel Street, which does have a greater mix of businesses. Parliament Street, I think, is a real no-brainer in some ways because of the mix of businesses that are already there and the kind of the short nature of the street. The one thing I'd say about the idea of having it just at night is that the downside of that is you don't really get to make the road or the street itself pedestrian or nicer. So what you end up doing is you have a street that looks like a road that cars can drive down, and then you just say people can walk on it at night. So you don't get a chance to upgrade the actual look of the street that way.
I'll give you an example. Drury Street, which is around the corner from the studio you're sitting in right now, you can drive down during the day and they close it off at night. And it's lovely at night, but it's a bit of a halfway house during the day and it isn't kind of ideal, is it?
I think Drury Street's closed during the day as well. But I think it could be the case of like Grafton Street, which is open to kind of deliveries in the morning, and there's a section of Drury Street you can drive down. But I think if you want to not just take the space, which is important, which is what we've done today on Parliament Street, if you want to actually make that street look better, if you want to put in street furniture, nice things like that, you need to make sure that traffic. You know, you can't just roll that stuff out every couple of hours, you know? You need to make a permanent change.
Last question to you, Louis. I've heard you speak about this before, and we've talked about Capel Street, and I do genuinely think Capel Street has come on in leaps and bounds in the last little while from what it was to where it is. It's definitely more of a destination than it was before. Are you softening ever so slightly on this? I know you're not happy, but are you softening to the idea of pedestrianisation?
A little bit. But I mean, I still think they should have left it open during the day and closed it off in the evening for the restaurants and the pubs.
Okay. Well, we'll see how this works. I think it's going to be a success in Parliament Street anyway, just the nature of extending Temple Bar into that area, and that's bound to be a good thing. Certainly push the prices maybe a little bit towards the prices that'll be up Temple Bar, but I'm sure there'll be great value to be had as well. Michael Pidgeon, Green Party councillor, Louis Copeland, owner of Louis Copeland and Son, their shop on Capel Street. Thank you both very much for joining us. Lots to come on the programme, of course, over the next while. We're going to come back to July the 4th. Is it a little different? Is it a little bit, less celebratory if you're not an American this year? Have we kind of fallen out with the US? And if so, why? We're going to come back to that in the next hour. But we're going to talk about physical affection and long-term relationships next.